All right, what's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Of course, I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. We got a new guest co-host, Ryan. I don't think you've been a co-host yet. You've been interviewed several times, but you're going to help me talk to Dr. Talil Hariri about hip mobility issues.
Yeah.
So why don't you give me a brief summary of what your talk was in there, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, basically, my talk was given to me, the topic they wanted me to talk about were mobility issues for our athletes. And I kind of went one direction with it. You can go a variety of ways, but I went with FAI, which is femoral acetabular impingement. It's basically where you get an impingement of the hip, kind of like you get shoulder anterior impingement from the bones coming together and pinching the labrum. And so I discussed a few topics of like how the bony alignment or bony deformities can play a role in that, and then how neuromuscular control of your pelvis can also create that as well.
All right. So I'm not well versed in FAI, in you know how to test for that and those kind of things. So I don't know. Usually I approach this as I want to learn.
Sure.
And so you know I may ask you to break things down for real
simple.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But Ryan, I'm sure, has quite a bit. So when we're talking about hip mobility, one of the things that has been a recurring theme in the past few years is that nothing is independent. So an ankle sprain may be because of a hip issue,
mm-hmm.
or a knee issue is actually a hip issue, but it's just projecting or showing as a knee problem.
Sure.
And so can you talk about that just a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, in my presentation, I showed a clip of where RG3 tore his ACL and his LCL, and I feel like there was a lot of hip problems that may have caused that, which is really surprising with him, especially because he was a hurdler, a world-class hurdler, mm-hmm. in high school and college. And so typically those guys have good hip mobility. But I think after he got into football and tore his ACL the first time, he must not have, you know, targeted the hip as strongly as I would have liked him to, because he presented in his vertical leap and his combine before he went to the NFL with knees that almost completely touched before he jumped in his vertical leap. And later on in the season, actually in the NFC wildcard game, he tore his ACL and LCL again, and it put him out. But really, the knee can really be affected by how weak the hip is. And I know I'm not talking specifically about mobility right now, but the lateral rotators of the hip, hip abductors, and weakness in the glutes basically can put your knee in compromise, you know, potentially causing an ACL tear down the line. So that's one thing that can happen with it. If you have mobility restrictions in your hip as well, you're not going to squat correctly. So our Olympic weightlifting or our power lifters are going to have mechanical problems when they're squatting and trying to perform some of those maneuvers as well.
So when you have advanced lifters come into your clinic and tell you about their either knee pain or hip pain, and when you have them demonstrate an exercise for you and they immediately go to a greater toe out position, do you try and fix that, or do you just try and accommodate so that there's less of an obvious external rotation toe out deficit, or do you look at the hip and say maybe because of their hip alignment and control they have to toe out to get that range?
Sometimes I do that, yeah. If I determine that they have hip retroversion, and I feel like if they internally rotate too much, then they're going to put their labrum up and compromise, then I'll have them toe out a little bit and tell them, for you, because of your alignment, I don't really think it's good for you to try to keep your feet pointed straight. So go ahead and toe out a little bit and compensate for that alignment issue that you have. And that's just the way that you developed. And there's nothing wrong with that, but we need to realize that you're not going to be able to force it into that forward or that forward toe position.
Right, so for somebody who maybe has done a lot of bilateral lifting, maybe high school athlete, doesn't have a lot of experience and just does what the coaches tell them, and they're complaining of either back pain, hip pain, knee pain, and you have them demonstrate a unilateral exercise, what do you typically see whenever you see a lack of hip mobility? What kind of examples would you see with those exercises?
So typically we have people do like a single leg squat, and we'll do this with like knee patients as well, but we want to look to make sure that they can flex at the hip just like they can flex at the knee. And what tends to happen are those patients that don't have dynamic control of their pelvis, or they can't control their core, then they tend to lean way forward on their squats or their single leg squats and deadlifts. And then they get this hyperlordotic position, or that increased arch of their back, and that puts them at a deficient angle. So then now their hip is closing down quickly, and you're putting your hip at risk of tearing up your labrum. And if you do that repetitively over the course of a few seasons, you're going to chew up the anterior labrum and have some hip pathology.
So with strengthening exercises, when you have these guys come in, talk to me. I'm just going to kind of give you that population.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about butt wink.
Butt winking, yeah. Okay, so.
And do you fix it? And what do you feel like?
Wait, okay, first describe that. I don't know.
Okay, I'll let Tom talk
about
that.
It's a phenomena. No, it's not. It's just it's a thing that happens.
Do you need to YouTube it?
Yeah. you may get some interesting results. Don't do it on your work computer. So I've noticed this a lot with our CrossFitters that come in with whatever pathology, we get them to squatting again. And, they're told to go very deep in their squats. And so once you get the hip past 90 degrees, their butt will tuck under. So you've got good alignment, you're squatting down, and then all of a sudden you get this wink where your butt kind of does a pelvic tilt, and then you come back up, and it comes back out. So it's just like this little wink once you get to that lower position. And some of that's normal to a certain extent, because once you get past 90 degrees, your hip has to accommodate, your pelvis has to accommodate around the femur. I don't necessarily like it, because you're going to lose control of your core. I want you to be able to go down as deep as you can, maintaining a good straight lumbar spine. And then sometimes I'll have my athletes do a squat, sit down in that position where right before their back is about to wink or they're about to lose that position, and take two breaths down there so they hold that position so they're really getting that core to fire, and then come out of that squat. But, yeah, it's basically – I feel like their control of their core isn't sufficient enough for going that deep. And I have a lot of CrossFitters that I'll back them up and do a lot of core strengthening with them before I let them go back and do those kinds of squats again.
What's your thought on hamstring tightness creating the butt wink?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because of where the hamstring attaches on the ischial tuberosity, once they squat down, the hamstrings will pull it into that butt wink.
What about the knee flexion?
I was going to say I find a hole in that theory, because just like you were mentioning, the knee is flexed when you do a squat. So now you're not stretching the hamstring across two joints. You're just stretching it across one. And if you have normal hamstring flexibility, and it doesn't have to be great, you don't have to be able to do splits, but if you have a bent knee, you should be able to maintain your pelvic position. So I don't think the hamstring really plays as much of a role as some people think.
So it sounds like the pelvic position is going to affect the hip mobility.
Oh, yeah.
What exercises do you like to implement into somebody who, let's say, falls into an anterior pelvic tilt?
So starting from the basics, we go flat on a table, or treatment table. The patient's lying supine with their knees bent. Have them trying to correct their pelvic tilt. So usually they're sitting with their butt, sticking out, and their back is arched. I want them to reverse that and tuck their tailbone under, flatten out their back. Hold that position for a couple breaths, and then relax. Then we'll build on top of that, have them do a posterior pelvic tilt, and start marching with one leg, lifting it up. Don't lose the position of your pelvis as you're doing it, and do the opposite side. And then keep doing other things like let your knee fall to the side, bring it back up, let the other knee fall to the side while you're maintaining your position. That's where I like to start. Then we progress with more functional movements, so getting them off the table. I like to use a dowel where I put a stick against their head, between their shoulder blades, and all the way down to their butt, and making sure they maintain those three points of contact while they're doing a squat or a hip hinge or a single leg deadlift or lunging or monster walks, those types of things. Because if they can create or maintain that pelvic stability throughout those functional motions, hopefully it will improve their neuromuscular control of their pelvis during sporting activities. And so like Ryan alluded to, if you can get them out of that anterior tilt, then you're going to create more room for their hip to move. They have more clearance. So basically the socket, when it's anterior tilted, is shutting down the joint because it's closing it off, kind of like a shoulder blade that's winging because it closes off the joint, and then you try to raise your arm and you get that impingement. Same type of deal. So when your pelvis is anteriorly rotated and you try to flex your femur, you're going to get contact between the two points of bone, the acetabular rim and then the neck of the femur. And so that can cause irritation. Eventually it could wear down the labrum and cause a tear. So just getting them out of that position, having them improve their rectus abdominis control, their glute and hamstring strengthening, it should help them in the long run and avoid some issues.
All right, so you mentioned at 90 degrees they lose control of their core. Is that because they're untrained or because anatomically that's what has to happen?
A little of each. I think anatomically there is a little bit of compensation that has to happen, but with good pelvic control you should be able to maintain that. And as you get stronger, you typically get a little bit more upright position with your squat. And I know the FMS kind of talks about not leaning too far forward and those types of things. As you get more mobility of your hips, as you get more mobility in your thoracic spine, those types of things, you can, and your core strength can maintain your upright posture, then you don't wink as much. You know, I think a winking is something that comes in if you have a lot of deficits.
So in Jeremy's case, when he's at school and he's got either kids that are strengthening or recovering from an injury, and he sees this wink, this mm-hmm. hip mobility issue, what variations of exercises would you recommend to avoid the wink or to have them continue to develop the strength that they're trying to get without aggravating their hips?
Okay. So one thing that the FMS does is they'll put a lift under your heels. Kind of shifts your weight forward, so now your weight is shifted forward and you can kind of sit back on your heels a little bit more, and that'll allow you to be more in an upright position. So that's first step. I typically start there, and then I want to remove that heel lift. You can also train people holding on a pole, have them squatting down and standing up, you know, just holding a stationary object, whether it's a door jamb or the squat rack, and keeping their posture upright as they go down. And if they can do that, then they should be able to do that with a bar on their back or, you know, overhead squat, those types of things. But when you don't have that neuromuscular control or that core strength, it falls apart. So I would start there and build up weight slowly.
All right, so just to kind of recap, you said you do the heel lift, so a little something underneath the mm-hmm. heels so that the weight goes more back on the heels there and helps keep your spine straight.
Posture upright. Yeah.
When you're doing that, you mentioned the dowel. Do you do that at the same time, or are those completely different?
Oh, they're different exercises. You don't have to do those. Yeah, you don't have to do those together. The heel lift is something, you know, in the FMS or some people who haven't been trained in functional movement screening, they may think that it's because you have calf tightness, you know, because some people say, okay, if you don't have calf tightness, your heels won't stay on the ground when you do a squat. Well, you put this heel lift and now all of a sudden they can do it. Well, I really think it's you got to assess their calves, because I think a lot of times they have the mobility in their ankles, but it's really the shifting of their weight, and now they have a mechanical advantage to do it. And going back to the dowel, that is just something that I want to transition my patients from the table to something off the table so they can do functional activities and hopefully get some carryover into their sporting event. And so I would do that a little bit separate. You don't have to do it. You guess you could, but I would typically do like an overhead squat with the heels lifted, even if it's just the dowel overhead, not like a big heavy bar.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we're coming up in football season mm-hmm. here pretty soon, and you got a lot of sprinters and a lot of runners. And like you mentioned in your presentation, some of these athletes develop that sort of anterior pelvic tilt, lordotic spine, big glutes, big butts, because mm-hmm. those are the muscles they primarily use.
Mm-hmm.
Is that necessarily a bad thing, or is that something that you feel like you can kind of manage and control?
I don't think it's a necessarily bad thing. You know, if they're not having pain with it, that's great. I just would caution those patients or those athletes down the line, you know, if they ever stop sprinting or, you know, if they just join corporate America and they still have those same pathologies, then down the line they may have back issues, you know. So making sure that they're staying flexible, making sure that they continue their core work. But like you said, those are their primary movers when they're running and sprinting, so they need that. But the rest of us, you know, I don't need those big glutes. I need my hip flexibility, which, you know, a lot of us suffer with. So
the desk jockeys
mm-hmm.
who sit all day, right, what can they do to avoid the we'll call it the accrual of this position. Mm-hmm. So if you're sitting 8 to 10 hours and you get up and then you try and be a weekend warrior and go play, you know, pick a game of basketball,
yeah,
what most likely is going to happen, and then what can they do throughout the week to kind of avoid those issues?
Great question. Yeah, I see this a lot. I think me and you probably come across these guys all the time in our clinics. You know, you sit at a desk all day in front of a computer, your hips are in a shortened position all day, you're going to get that hip flexor tightness. You got a slump posture, you're not really activating your glute, I mean your core as much. And then you go try to do a lot of physical activity, you know, stuff that you're trying to keep up with the younger guys, and then you injure yourself. I think the main thing to do is make sure that, and you don't have to do yoga, but do some sort of like stretching routine for your hip flexors. Do some planks, you know, some general strengthening for your core, because once you lose that dynamic control of your core and you go try to do some sort of sporting event, whether it's basketball or whatnot or flag football, that's where a lot of patients come into problem, or where athletes come into a lot of problems, because then they get other issues. They get strains of their back, they get ACL tears. There have been a lot of studies that show that weakness in your core and the inability to maintain like a balance on one leg with perturbations, that's a precursor to getting an ACL tear. So it's challenging. I know as we get older, we lose strength and we don't stay on top of our physical nature, but you're going to endanger yourself if you want to try to compete with the young guys and you're not taking care of yourself.
So, you know, I obviously sit at a desk a lot when we're doing paperwork, putting in physicals. We get up quite often, but I could be sitting for 2 or 3 hours at a time.
Sure.
So if I was to say get up every 10-15 minutes, what would be a good exercise for me to do there to stretch them out?
Yeah.
Like, are lunges good?
Yeah. I think that's actually a pretty good exercise. You showed like what's called like the world's greatest stretch or something in Europe.
Yeah.
That
full body mobility flow. I mean, something like that where you're kind of lunging forward, then you get a great hip stretch, and then you can get thoracic rotation, and then you kind of come out of it and do some hamstring stretching. Something like that, depending on how tight your pants are because your work restrictions, yeah. You know, you maybe you're splitting your pants. But something like that would be awesome because you could tackle a whole lot of things in a short amount of time.
Is it all stretching, or do you need to strengthen something as well?
Yeah, definitely strength is important too. I love planks, and I know it sucks for the patients, but you do planks on your elbows and then on your side, getting the glutes involved and the obliques. Those are the types of things that are going to really carry over into your activities.
So, Ryan, going back way back, we talked about core stuff. I do push-ups. Like, I try to do, like, 100 push-ups a day. So do push-ups count as planks, or is it really the what you get from holding it for 30 seconds versus – because in a push-up, if I'm staying correct, then I'm more or less doing a dynamic plank.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's kind of – we could take it back to – it's basically into moving plank. But just like with the straight leg raise, endurance test – or with just a static plank hold, the question you have to ask yourself is, are you able to maintain that proper hip position while you're going through your push-up? You can just do it. You can do a push-up in an anterior pelvic tilt and do a great workout for your pecs, but you do little to nothing for your core. You would need to then try and really emphasize posterior pelvic tilt, activate the abs so that you feel like you're trying to kind of, you know, activate there, stay tense to the front. So when you're going through your push-ups, you maintain your core activation. That would then be more of a moving plank, a dynamic plank. But typically with push-ups, Talal can kind of expound on this, if you're not focusing on the core stability, the hip stability, you're going to end up falling into a position where your body kind of tends to rest, and that's probably that anterior pelvic tilt.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, we have the biggest ligament of our body is the wide ligament on the front of the hip. So a lot of people, when they fall out of their good position and during push-ups, you're just hanging on some ligaments. You're not really activating a whole lot of muscles. So as long as you are conscious of what you're trying to get out of that exercise, because, you know, there's you're not going to get what you want if you don't produce it during that exercise. So try to get that abs tensed up like somebody was going to punch you in the stomach. You got that tense in there, and then you can go down and you can take care of two things. Like you said, if you're doing 100 push-ups a day, that's like you're doing planks all day long, you know.
Something to progress would be to lift up a leg. So then you have to, you know, require a little bit more balance and stability through the core to keep you from wobbling. So that's going to increase that engagement as well. It may drop you down to more like 75 push-ups. You could alternate legs, but you know, if it's anytime there's 2 feet on the ground, it's going to be easier on your body. So if you feel like you're blown through 100 push-ups, take a foot off the ground or maybe elevate your feet and then really think about activating your abs, and that may make the exercise a little bit harder for you.
All right. And so, and again, the core stability is going to help with the pelvic rotation and...
Absolutely.
And thus the hip mobility, right?
And thus the hip mobility. And thus hopefully saving your knees down the kinetic chain, so...
maybe that's why I was playing freeze tag with the kids at Vacation Bible School and jumped back and landed on my knee, hyperextended my knee, and it was killing me.
Oh, no.
See, maybe if I was just more mobile in my head.
It's all in the
easy
hips.
Easy push-ups.
Wasn't that Chubbs Peterson?
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore?
Yeah.
All in the hips?
It's all in the hips.
All in the hips. All right, what else you got? Anything else, Ryan?
I don't know. Talal, anything else that we missed out on?
No, I think it was a good topic, and I hope that it was well-received by, you know, the athletic training population. I tried to incorporate some things that maybe they could pull away from it, and my email was attached to that presentation. If anybody has any questions, it's talal.hariri@memorialherman.org.
I have a question. Do you own a squatty potty?
No, I do not own a squatty potty.
Really? That's a bad idea?
I haven't tried it. I've never tried squatting.
I have 3 young boys. The oldest one is 5. And so, you know, they have to have a stool to pee in the potty.
Uh-huh.
So that stool just normally sits right in front of the toilet. And so...
One way to find out.
Give it a shot.
We do. We use it because it's there. It's like, oh, it's just more comfortable. I just wondering if it really
works. Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff on the internet that says that the rectum is at a better position when you're squatted like that. So
it was on Shark Tank. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, exactly. And they're making tons of money off of it.
So, and we've definitely digressed. So. All right. Well, hey, thanks a bunch. If someone wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Talal.Hariri@memorialherman.org. And I'm up in the Northeast region. At the Summer Creek location off the Beltway, Sam Houston Beltway and 59, close to Redstone Golf Course.
All right. Email them. Check them out. Ryan, thanks for helping me interview Talal. And I think that'll be it for this interview. Thanks.
Thank you.